Ecclesiasticus. If you think of the church there in Sydney, Open Bible Baptist Church, pray that the Lord sends them a man to help those folks. Got some 8, 9, or 10 folks that are just fine people. And yeah, man, probably 8 of them, they're just all singles too, aren't they, Jen? I'm pretty sure they're all just singles. One is in his 70s, one's in his 40s, one's in his 20s, 2 females probably. Yeah, that, 6 of them that I'm thinking of were all singles. 2 were brothers and sister. Okay, Ecclesiastes 7 is where we're at. I had to get on the website and listen to the last time I taught so I knew where I left off. 7-Eleven, that sounds familiar. Okay, if you have an interest in seeing something that's very unique, see my wife afterwards. Don't want to embarrass anybody, but it's very, very nice. Let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us now as we approach the Bible, approach this holy word, this holy book, that you might help us to understand it. You promised, you made a statement in John that if a man is willing to do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether I speak of myself or of God. And Lord, that's a great promise. I've had many people ask, how do you know? And most of them, I think they really didn't want to know. Lord, I want to know. And I want to know what your word says, and I ask you to help us to understand it. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Ecclesiastes 7, this is a perfect sermon in the Bible. This is how to prepare a sermon, how to preach a sermon, how to lay it out. Depending upon your different approach, if you've ever taught, if you've never taught a lesson or never spoke publicly in front of somebody, if I can do it, you can do it. And the first time, being raised in a farm, very quiet individual, I would talk to my hogs, the dogs, and that's about it. And when the Lord called me to preach, when I was 9 or 10, I had an inkling that maybe I would be a preacher, and that went through my ears real quick. Of course, back in those days, real small brain, it goes, even if you teach 1 or 2 people, that's always best to start with small. But this is the method in the Bible. Ecclesiastes is a method. However you lay something out, whether you draw it out, write it out, type it out, or now use iPads. That's what Jim Walker had. Used an iPad, just set that on. Usually it's mine. I type it out. It's usually front page and back. That's it. I was watching, does anybody know, there's probably the largest Bible-believing church in the country. DeMichael. I watched him preach over in Ohio. He and Brother Saul have pastor schools together, and I watched him preach, and I watched him from the side so you could see how he's doing stuff. And he must have had 25 pieces of paper. Little pieces, large, small, and I'm watching him, and he's just preaching away, and he's taking this one, putting it in a stack, and then this one over in a stack, and then he puts them around. And that's how he preaches. I could not figure out how he kept all that straight. And he'd go to this one, and then this one, and then he'd come over here. And that's just his style. Brother Roloff, he didn't put anything in front of him. One time he was proud, he showed... He showed Jack Hiles, they used to preach in years past, he showed Jack Hiles his sermon notes. He had 8 words on it. He was proud of that one. Some folks, they write it all out and almost read it. Sinners in the Hands of the Angry God, Jonathan Edwards read that real close to his face, dry as could be. Monotone, yeah. So just however you write some things down, look it over, and even write yourself notes. I used to write in mine, I don't anymore, enunciate, slow down, stupid. I'd write that stuff to myself on there. And so this is a sermon. And when you have a sermon or an idea, you want to get somebody from point A to point B. Usually when you go from point A to point B, you got to take little steps. A lot of people try to jump all the way. How you got from point A to point B is often a long path, and so you have to give people that same patience, taking something one point at a time as you go. Going verse by verse, okay, this is obviously teaching more so than preaching. Verse 11, he says, wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. Now remember, he is looking at life from under the sun, and he is talking about an inheritance. Now sadly, in our culture, usually what happens with an inheritance, the vast majority is stolen from the individual through the government or attorneys. And so a person has to learn to try to figure out how to avoid that. And there are ways of avoiding it. There are things to do that you could avoid that. Okay, wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it is, there is profit to them that see the sun. Wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. Notice it's not the love of money. Money is not evil. It's the love of money. Now, this money is a defense. I would say that's something that can throw be used to go to Luke 16, which has a very difficult passage about making friends of mammon. Okay, but money is a defense. Now, in the Bible, when the Bible mentions money, it mentions, it's referring to gold and silver. It's not referring to the paper currency and the fraud that's being perpetrated throughout the world. Okay, that's an enslavement. Okay, what that is. And of course, we can see it is working very well as far as that goes. But money is a defense. And we need to recognize it as that. In our culture, with the currency the way it is, every one of us, I don't care what size your bank account is, can be taken from you in minutes. Just minutes. Just by a hit of the button of the bank, the bank shuts down and everything's lost. Everything in a safe deposit box belongs to the bank. And a lot of people don't recognize that. Okay, and so that's our culture, and that's the way it is. It matters not. Okay, if everybody went to the DeMott State Bank and asked for all their savings accounts pulled out, the maximum the bank could give every single person, if they did it, would be 5%. That's the max. That's what you call a run on the bank. That's all they're required to have on hand. So a lot of people don't know that. Okay, and so if the average American, somebody, President Andrew Jackson said, if the average American understood the banking system, there would be a riot and a revolution. And of course, we're kept in the dark on those things. So money is a defense. It's something that is used as a tool. Okay, but the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Okay, so money doesn't give life. Money doesn't provide happiness. Wisdom is what provides this joy, this peace, the happiness, the life. In Proverbs chapter 18, it says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. What we say, the words we express can give life and encouragement or blessings to folks. Or it actually can cause people death. Now, obviously, it's not instantaneous. I kill you, you know. But it affects people emotionally. And it tears into their heart. And you wound them. Okay, and so wisdom. Verse 13, consider the work of God. For, now here in this sermon, most of the sermon is not about God. It's about life. Now he is thinking about God. Consider the work of God. Okay, what is the work of God? Well, you got the creation, you have salvation. Okay, in this context, most likely creation. Consider the work of God, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? Okay, who can make that straight? The devil, which he hath made crooked. Okay, if you look at animals, okay, and God placed in animals certain things, and you and I can't change some of those things. A horse, a very strong animal, but very dumb, you know, in many ways. Now, you can train it. We watched a guy train a horse, very first, the horse never been trained at, and if you go to like a Farm Progress show or anything like that, often they will have that, and that's amazing to watch. Guys do it where he's actually sitting on the horse within about an hour. And who did that? Jeff Adams showed it. It took him about 2 hours, I think. But that is really amazing. But animals like chickens. You know, I used to watch sitting there. I like to sit in the chicken pen and kind of watch them, especially the little chicks. And you'd see one peck on it. I'd say, "You dumb bird, what are you picking on?" So I'd hit it. I was trying to train the birds, you know, not to peck on each other. You're not going to change a dumb animal. You know, that's built in. That's built in. A lot of times we, you know, yell our animals for doing something. That's what God put in them, and we're not going to change it. Okay? And he's got... Now, isn't that interesting? Verse 13, we see opposite, straight and crooked. That's where the word queer comes from. They, you know, if I, you know, talk to these people, and on occasion, I try not to, but when you're down at Purdue, they come by you, and, you know. And I play dumb most of the time when they bring it up. Kid said to me, "I'm gay." I said, "Well, I'm happy too. Glad for you." And then he didn't know what to say to me after that. "Well, no, I'm gay." I said, "Yeah, I just told you I'm a very happy person too." And, "No, you don't understand." I said, "I don't want to get it. Explain it." He didn't want to say I'm queer. That convicts his conscience. You know the word gay is only found one time in the Bible? James 2, verse 3. It talks about somebody wearing gay clothing. I think that's a prophecy. Because James is a last days doctrine. In the last days, that term will be used by political figureheads. That's the ones who's going to be at the top running the show. Okay, and it's right there in front of us, and it says that the Antichrist regardeth not women. And so that's something to think about. But the opposite of straight is crooked. And crooked is where the word queer comes from. And I'm not saying you should just flippantly use those terms in this day and age, because people sue you over that stuff. But I don't like to use the word gay towards those people, because they're not happy people. They're just not. But again, politically correct, you get around some people, you use their terms, they understand. So the Bible here is straight and crooked. Those are the opposites. So we cannot make straight Satan, who God has made crooked. There's nothing we can do. He cannot get saved. He will not get saved. Okay, now we obviously know, as far as men and women go, God can help change someone's nature and mold them. But that person has to be willing to be changed by the Lord. Verse 14, in the day of prosperity, be joyful. Okay, but in the day of adversity, consider. He doesn't say be sad. It's not the opposite of joyful. Consider, think. You know, consider God. That's about the time people consider God in day of adversity. And all of us will admit that when something bad's happened, we're going to pray harder. All of us admit that. Okay, if you're facing some big struggle, you're praying harder for the rapture. I mean, that's just the way it is. Consider. Okay, day of prosperity. Prosperity, you know, America is a prosperous country, but, you know, it's in debt. Australia is the same way. Europe is the same way. It's all a facade. Okay, but in the day of adversity, consider. The last time Americans actually had adversity as a nation was the Great Depression. And they considered God at that time. Then he says, God also hath set the one over against the other. So there's a cycle. And this is often called an economic cycle. But there's a cycle in life. God also has set the one over against the other to the end that man shall find nothing after him. All things have I seen in the days of my vanity. There is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. Okay, and this is a common thing, and this is the age-old question that's often asked, and this is why this is called wisdom books. Why is it that good people suffer? Why is that? Why is it that people like George Burns lives to be 100 years old? Okay, and this was the problem in the book of Job. The three fellas assumed from their vision of watching people, and under the Old Testament covenant, generally speaking, if a man lived righteous, he could be rewarded financially and health-wise with God. Under the Old Testament covenant, that was a general rule, not an absolute rule, but a general rule. In the New Testament, that rule goes out the door. Okay, in the New Testament, that rule about living godly shall suffer persecution. Probably the greatest Christian ever lived would have to be the Apostle Paul. I mean, he's got to be up there. And he died very poor. Okay, and you know, a lot of the troubles he went through. You read all the problems he had. And this, the health and wealth guys on TV, the passage that they use to try to reinforce that are always Old Testament passages. So, why is it that people have troubles? Now, Paul understood this. In Philippians chapter 1, verse 27 to 30, he mentioned about trouble that people go through. And he said, trouble verifies often that you're right. The trouble does. That you're doing something right. Okay, and so whether it's right, whether it's self-inflicting, okay, whether the problem is self-inflicting or whatnot, it matters not, okay, but the Lord will work with us through our troubles, okay. A lot of times we just have to look at the big picture. So he is saying this, that he has noticed, he watched, there are just people that perish in their righteousness. And there are wicked people that live a long life. He says, verse 16, be not righteous over much. Kind of a weird statement. Be not righteous over much or overly righteous. Neither make thyself overwise. Why shouldest thou destroy thyself? Okay, with the question, it makes it kind of strange, like, don't be a know-it-all or holier than thou, because that's when pride sets in. Okay, in 1 Corinthians, it says that knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. And so a person should try to grow in knowledge. And yes, we try to gain knowledge, and then you get around more and more. If you have the questions to answer or the answers to people's questions, people will often say, oh, you're so wise and smart and all that stuff. Okay, fine and hunky-dory, that's fine. Flattery is like perfume. It's nice to smell, but don't swallow it. Okay, and so as far as those things go, recognize that there is a limitless knowledge out there. And okay, maybe a person has the answer for this and this and this, but what about this and this and this? Solomon was a guy who could lecture about trees. He could lecture about orchards. He could lecture about animals. And the guy was intelligent. And so a person wants to grow. Okay, often it's interesting when kids go through high school or college. It's not a, I think this is true, sophomore, you know, a kid went through freshman class, and now he thinks he knows something. He becomes a sophomore. Sophomore is defined to mean wise fool. And you know, being around people, some people that they know enough to be dangerous. Okay, and so we learn when we study our Bible, we need to study the Bible more and more. But just consider that the grace of God. And when you have an opportunity to start asking questions, point them to the Word of God. And then we are to answer people meekly, according to 2 Timothy chapter 2. And actually, technically, this is how I did write this friar, because it's just a one-on-one thing. Now, if I had to deal with this friar publicly with some people around, depending upon his spirit, I would have probably been rougher with him. Okay, because that's how Jesus did it. But when it's one-on-one, 2 Timothy, if you would, let's go to that one, look at it. 2 Timothy tells us that we deal with people personally, meekly, okay, and that's an attitude. And here's how I do it when I wrote this guy, is I would say, this is the research I did. This is the conclusion I came to. You may not have researched the same things I did, but this is what I researched, and because of that, this is the conclusion I came to. Now, trying to convince him different, it's going to be tough because he's got a salary he's getting paid from to change his belief system. He's got a lot at stake. 2 Timothy 2, verse 24. This one says, "And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth." So that's like a personal thing. Now, it says he must not strive, but we find other places where it says strive to preach the gospel. So that's public. This is private. And when one is out street preaching, if you happen to be yelling, okay, you got to strive to preach the gospel. But when somebody stops and comes up to you, you have to shift and then just talk to them very kindly. Okay, and again, there are some personal conversations that you do have with people that you do need to really put down the truth on them and let them have it. But each time, the Spirit of God will hopefully guide a person. Okay, verse 17, "Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time?" Okay, that's like the contrast of overmuch righteous. Verse 16, there is a balance in life. Verse 18, now this is one of those verses that are kind of one of the circle or whatnot. It's kind of it's a general rule of life. And it says this, "It is good that thou shouldest take hold of this, yea, also from this withdraw not thine hand. For he that feareth God shall come forth of them all." Okay, with time, "he that feareth God shall come forth of them all." Okay, if you watch sports, if you watch like the standings of baseball or basketball or whatnot, often at the beginning of the season, one team may be hot and they'll be at the top, okay? But there are going to be certain teams that may be at the bottom, but these certain teams have a track record and a history that they're usually at the top. St. Louis Cardinals are one of those, okay? And so they are almost always at the top. Maybe at the beginning of the season they're down here, but you watch them through the year, they'll be creeping to the top. I don't know. No. Oh, the Nephilims. The San Francisco Nephilims are playing somebody. Two brothers. Can you imagine that? Two brothers against each other? And the one brother has hired the other brother's son to coach with him. You got John and Jim, whatnot. Okay, but the idea, the common phrase that goes with this verse 18 is that the cream always rises to the top. Okay, and this, he's saying the ones that fear God, that have a fear toward God, they're going to be the ones who come to the top eventually. They may not be first, but they always come to the top. You know, people say cream rises to the top, and if I'm in a joking mood with them, I say, yeah, but you remember that sewage floats. And that kind of keeps a guy humbled. Okay, and so that's how that goes. So, verse 18, that's the fearing of God. And fearing God means exactly that. Now, there's obviously a balance in the Bible. We are in the love of God, but then there's a fear of God. So there's a balance between those two. The fearing God means exactly that. We are to be afraid of Him. When you get put out with God, and I get put out with God just like everybody does, just like any child gets put out with their parents. And so you get put out with God and get upset with Him, and why aren't you doing anything? And I'll sit down and think, what am I doing? This being spoke the stars into existence. This God spoke hell into existence. And I'm fussing with Him? You know, that's like an ant fussing with an elephant. The elephant can squish us anytime it wants. And so, but yet we do get put out with God. And so there's times we need to fear him. Fear that God. That is the beginning of wisdom. So Solomon mentioned that in Proverbs, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So there is a fear of God. There is a love of God, but there's a fear of God. And fearing God is the one that's ultimately going to rise to God's, in God's program. Verse 19, wisdom strengtheneth the wise more than 10 mighty men which are in the city. Okay, the example of that, common sense, in football, you take football, you've got the linemen, the big bruisers, the big guys that can squish anybody. Their salary is probably 1/10 of the quarterback's. The quarterback's usually the runt that they got to protect. They got to make rules that he doesn't get hurt. He can slide this and do that. But you see, the lineman, that's the strength, that's where it's at, but the guy that's got the wisdom is the one who gets paid the most. And that's the standard here. Okay, and that's the wisdom. Often you'll see a young kid will just grunt and get the thing done, and an older gentleman would come along and use some leverage and just outsmart the things. Verse 20. Verse 20 was a verse quoted by Charles Hood to stump a guy years ago when we had down in Rensselaer. This guy claimed to be sinless. And Charles raised his hand when this guy asked for a question. He raised his hand and he always held his finger kind of like this. Oh, and he'd talk like that. Oh, Ecclesiastes 7:20. And when he said that, I said, oh, brother, because I remember the reference. And a guy turned to it and read it. He said, for there is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not. Oh, I know what that is. Over here in 1 Peter chapter 4, that's exactly how that guy responded. It says the judgment begins at the house of God. And when he did that, I said, ooh, hot potato, hot potato, hot potato. Had to get rid of that one. Okay, so verse 20, there is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not. A just man, a man of justice, a man of judgment. Okay? It is joy to the just to do judgment. It's joy. Now, judgment or execution of justice, there's a thin line between that and vengeance. Vengeance is usually self-serving. Justice is usually serving the victim. That's basically the two differences. And justice is a good thing. Isaiah 61 verse 8, I the Lord love judgment. Okay, and a person that receives justice, okay, for example, in Numbers chapter 16, when God declared judgment against the people of Korah, God did not want people to feel sorry for him. They had coming to him what they had coming. No feeling sorry. What happens in a lot of churches, when somebody is really affected the church and maybe caused a church split or whatnot, and somebody's gotten tired of it, and they just basically, some preachers boot them out of church or whatnot. You know, you always have these sad sacks and come and, you know, take up their offense. Hey, if that person is judged by the church, that's the way it goes. Pray for them. But don't take up their offense, because you're being a part of something that God has been working on. You're interfering with God. Okay, and so there's not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not. Very obvious statement. Nobody's sinless. Verse 21, 22, this verse right here, there are some verses in the Bible that you know that man didn't write. Some things in the Bible just, people just say, oh, the Bible was written by man. They don't read it. Because man don't read, write like some of this book writes. This is one of those examples, and we all can get this verse. We all can recognize it. We all can say ouch when we read it. Oh, he says this, also take no heed unto all things that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee. For oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others. Okay, servant in the Bible is similar to our word employee. Okay, so if you look up the word employee, it would have a similar definition of the word servant. Okay, a guy in the job of foreman. He overhears a couple of his people under him backstabbing him. He's mad. Hasn't he backstabbed them? Of course he has. And we all do it. We all do it. You know? And so he said, okay, you hear somebody talk about you. So what? It doesn't matter. Because we all talk about people. Don't get all bent out of shape. People get all bent out of shape. This is the one thing that bugs me about that, about Facebook. People get on Facebook and they don't think. They start typing. And hit the send button, and then everything goes out. It's just stupid. It's people showing the ignorance of their first thoughts. When you write something, or if you have your first, all of us know this, when you something just upsets you, your first reaction is usually the wrong reaction. Sit back and wait. You see, and that's the problem with this instantaneous stuff going throughout everywhere, is because people don't sit down and think, why am I doing, this is nuts. And then you've got to backpedal and correct all the foolishness that you pushed out there. Okay, and the thing is, okay, people talk, they talk. Our neighbor growing up, John Ross, I'd go over there often when his grandkids would come over, and we'd go over there and goof off over there. John, on occasion, he was a heathen, he was a wicked man, or as far as a worldly man. Eventually, he made a profession of faith, but being over there, on occasion, he would try to give me advice, you know, just off the cuff. And it's funny how certain things stick out in your mind as a kid. And one advice, I do remember him saying this, it was about girls. And he said, you know, it pays to advertise. And that one, I thought. And what he was trying to tell me that I ought to show off, you know, my big muscles or all like that. You know, I don't know what he's trying to tell me. And at that stage of my life, girls still had cooties. And so I could care less what he said about that one. But there was another time he said to me, he says, you know, people talk, and it doesn't matter what they say about you just as long as they're talking. I thought, why is he telling me that? That's good advice. That is good advice. They're talking, and it takes us over to 2 Corinthians. It's a very interesting passage about the ministry. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. This is the oxymoron of the ministry. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, he gives a bunch of contrast here. And Paul said, here's what you can expect in a ministry. Now, in the ministry, what I'm not just limiting this to, you know, pastors and stuff like that. On your job, when you witness to people, you are developing a ministry. That is your ministry, okay? And this is going to be a response from others when they have been influenced by you, your influence, your ministry that the Lord has used you with. And here's what it is. Verse 8, well, verse 3, giving no offense in anything, that the ministry be not blamed. And verse 8, by honor and dishonor, by evil report and good report, as deceivers yet true, as unknown and yet well-known. Unknown yet well-known. Being down in Rensselaer all these years, there's not going to be something in the paper about me. Positive. Oh, he's been pastor here for 25 years and people need to honor. No, they're not going to put that in the paper. But I guarantee you, if you start going around the town and in the courthouse, my name is well-known. My son Brent was called for jury duty. He said, Dad, I don't want to do that. I said, put in there that you are the son of David Hoffman. You won't get called. He put his name in there, and he wasn't called. Guarantee it. Okay? You're unknown, yet well-known. You see, and that's how it goes. That's the ministry. As deceivers, yet true. There's another case down there. Some of you may have known Kerry Schliemann. Kerry ran the men's softball league down there for years. Did a great job doing it. You know, and since he got out of it, it's gone to pot. But Carrie made a profession of faith. He and his wife with me made a profession of faith, and we developed a good friend, very good friendship. He didn't come to church much, but he developed very good friendship, very logical in his thinking. And he was at, and one guy came up, Carrie did not like any swearing. No swearing was allowed, which, man, that's a blessing. No taking God's name in vain. That was a blessing. One guy came up to Carrie. I was talking to Carrie, and this guy says, "Jesus Christ, Carrie." And Carrie goes, "Did you say cheese and rice?" Guy goes, yeah, cheese and rice, Carrie. I thought that was funny. But this one woman came up to Carrie, softball, and they got talking about church. And Carrie said, "Yeah, I go to church on occasion." This guy goes, "You go to church?" He said, "Yeah, I do. On occasion." "Where do you go?" "Well, I go where Dave Hoffman's a pastor." She goes, "Oh, that nut?" And he said, "Well, why do you say that?" "Well, that guy's a nut." "Well," he said, "well, have you ever heard him on the radio?" "No." "Have you ever heard him preach?" "No." "Have you ever read anything he's written?" "No." He said, "I didn't know you were a person like that." Oh, man, I thought, whoa, boom. Taking somebody's opinion about somebody? And, oh, he told me, boy, she got quiet. You see, well-known yet unknown. And there's going to be, if your witness goes out to your in through your job, people will talk behind your back. And they will say stuff. But then there's going to be a humble one here who says, "Hey, I don't know why you're saying that about that person. Every time I've talked to them, they've been straight with me. I don't know what you're saying." Just leave that stuff up to God. He'll take care of it. And so in that 21:22, let people talk. It doesn't matter what they say. You see? And so he says, "Take no heed unto all words that are spoken." Now, on that one, we can look at that one. People criticize. People comment about things. Okay? You and I don't have to take their advice about everything. Ask the Lord about it. We don't have to reject everything, but we don't have to take everything. Take some of the things and ask the Lord about it. You see, we're not going to refuse people's advice. Often, you know, people, like on the road, they honk the horn at you, you get mad about it, but they were in your blind side, they saved an accident. So in our path of life, if somebody gripes about something about us, it's probably something in our blind side that we don't see. Often criticism has a root of truth in there. And so we ought to be willing to accept it. Okay, and I've told this one before. You know, I was at the truck stop and this guy criticized what I said. He said you were 50% negative, okay, on that one. And I said, well, I thought that was... I said, thank you, and then he repeated, and I said, thank you, and he thought I was nuts after I said, thank you. He was trying to be critical, okay? And I said, that's a perfect balance. Well, when I listened to him, what he said, when I got in the car, I said, okay, Lord, what about that? I did consider what he said. What about that? And he didn't answer me. The Lord has selective hearing. And a week later, I gave the same thing, and a couple men got saved as a result of it, and then the Lord answered. And what about that? I said, okay, now I get it. Okay, and so we're not to take heed to everything. I believe we should be so sound in our Bible that we could hear a sermon and say, okay, he said this correct, I agree with, that's biblical. You know that one statement right there? I don't think that was right. But, you know, I'm saying to myself this. I'm not saying you have to be critical about everything. Just let it go in one ear, out the other. And so we can have a balance about everything. Okay, and you want to be sincere and truthful. So take heed, take no heed unto all words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee. For oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others. Okay, 23, all this have I proved by wisdom. Okay, I proved, I checked it out, persuaded. All this have I proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise. but it was far from me. So, I'm going to be wise. Don't seem like I am. Verse 24, that which is far off and exceeding deep, who can find it out? And there are some deep truths, strange truths. He said, I applied mine heart to know and to search and to seek out wisdom and the reason of things, and to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. Okay, 25, to seek and to seek out, search and seek out wisdom and the reason of reason. I try to understand why something takes place. Why is it that way? Not just the what, but why. One statement that I mentioned to the friar is that Catholics blindly follow, the vast majority of Catholics blindly follow their Pope. And they do. He denied that. He denied that. No way. No, they don't blindly follow him. He has been given the teaching authority by God. Hence, we get the interpretation of God from him because he was put in that position by God. And that's the argument I always hear him say. No, they blindly follow him. Ask a Catholic to give him a Bible reference of infant baptism. Why does he do it? He said so. Ask a Catholic to give a Bible verse about why I call him Father. They can't give anything. Why do we do it? He told me to. Why do I go confessional? He said so. Why do I do this and pay money to get out of purgatory? Because he said so. That's blind following. You know, and so, yeah, they blind follow. And so the thing is, okay, we learn, we study. Well, I want to know the ins and outs of something and the reason of things, so I can be fully persuaded in my own mind. I want to be, in my own heart, want to know why I believe what I believe and have the place in the Bible to believe it because it's mine. The Lord taught me this. Now, verse 26. Now, the women feminists or a lot of ladies won't like this passage. That's for sure. This is not real uplifting. But then again, you need to recognize where Solomon found his wives. I mean, where he got his wives isn't a real intelligent place to get them. So he's looking at all the women that he has, all the wives. He's got 1,000. And I find more bitter than death, the woman. And I'm sure some of them probably said that about him. We was at a Christian camp one time, and the boys had to do a skit. And a friend was with me, and we were trying to do a skit, and something came up about doing a skit about women. I said, how about that passage in Ecclesiastes, I find something more bitter than death, the woman. And he goes, oh, you had to mention that one. And he was having marriage troubles at the time, so it really sunk in. And it's kind of funny, one of the fellows up at the camp summit, he asked me a couple times, he said, you know, there's that verse in Proverbs about it's better to dwell in a white house than in a corner of a housetop than in a house with a brawling woman. I said, he said, you know, I found that a couple of times. I said, you have a little experience with that one? He said, oh, yeah, that one I really understood. And so, yeah, there you go. Well, when you got marriage troubles, verse 26, and you're having a fuss back and forth, yeah. And I'm sure ladies could say that about men. You know, I find more bitter than death the woman, whose heart is snares and nets, and her hands as bands. Whoso pleadeth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. Okay, there you go. Now, in that one, she's probably accused of whining and pouting to get her way. But on the man's side, verbal abuse. You know, on that side. They got their issues, men got their issues, women got theirs. Okay, but this is Solomon talking about his wives. But again, he didn't pick the best ones. I mean, he's going to the heathens to find the women he had. Verse 27, behold, this have I found, saith the preacher, counting one by one to find out the account, which yet my soul seeketh, but I find not. One man among 1,000 have I found, but a woman among all those I have not found. So counting 1,000 men, he said, I can find one good man in a bunch. He said, 1,000 women, I couldn't find one. Again, look where he's looking. You know? And so, I mean, he's not looking in the right place. That's his personal experience about life. You can find some virtuous women. I recognize that there are prices far above all rubies. But where the Word of God is preached, you're going to find a better choice there as far as you're going to find, you know, in a charismatic movement. Charismatic women are some of the most emotional. I won't tell you what guys in jail say about them, but they've got their take on them. Guys in jail, a lot of them got that figured out. Okay, and so he said, this is Solomon talking about his personal experiences. Okay, last verse. Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions. Okay, that's what he's thinking about it. Now, man upright, man sought out many inventions. Inventions of what? Often, sadly, inventions of evil. Recognizes his heart. Okay, there we go. We got chapter 7 done. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us to be faithful to your words, understand it better and better, more and more. And I pray you'd help us to have opportunities to show it to others so we might be a good testimony for thee. In Jesus' name, amen.